Hello, and welcome to another edition of From Their Perspective. I'm Greg Hayner, and today I'm going to be talking with Sarah Bradshaw, owner of Sarah Bradshaw Photography. Sarah is a full-time destination wedding photographer based in Washington, D.C., and her greatest passion is to photograph memories that will be remembered and cherished for generations. The natural elegance which is characteristic of her style is the result of her conscious effort to capture the classic beauty of a couple's wedding day, creating images that will be enjoyed for years to come. Please check out her work at sarahbradshawphotography.com. And so, as we get started here, Sarah, I'm curious to know, how did you get started in photography?
Yeah, it's a bit of a roundabout story, actually. So I was working for a nonprofit in Chicago, and throughout my time of working with them, there was always the question of what am I going to do next? And I spent about 3 years working for that organization and spent all of that time praying about the next step and had picked up an interest in photography. I can't remember how, without actually shooting. I didn't ever do anything with photography. I was just interested in it as a concept. But after spending that amount of time praying about it, decided that was something I wanted to pursue and had the chance to actually pray through long-term vision and purpose for it. So decided that I wanted to do missions photojournalism full time. So, left the organization, moved in with my parents, bought a camera, worked at Starbucks, got as much training as possible, and actually did spend, a bit of time overseas. I spent close to a month in Thailand and about 3 weeks in Kenya doing mission work, and realized that it just wasn't a good fit for me and my giftings. I'm the personality person who needs to be deeply rooted with good relationships and structure in my life, and living out of a suitcase and that kind of vagrant lifestyle was not a good fit for me or a good way to express my interest in work. So moved back home, started working for another photographer in my area, just second shooting for weddings. And I ended up just falling head over heels in love with weddings and wedding photography. And, it's taken me a long time to actually love the business side of it, but I've fallen in love with being a business owner as well. And I've been full time for 6 years now, and it's been a huge blessing and joy. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. So, what is it then that as a wedding photographer, you know, you get up in the morning and what is it that drives you, gets you going and says, yeah, that's why I'm up this morning. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. What gets you excited about photography?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a few different things, but I think the primary one, the reason I shoot weddings is because I love marriage. And I love marriage because I think it pictures the gospel. So that is the big reason that I get up every morning and I spend my life trying to provide really good wedding images for couples. Because I think that you can have a really strong, beautiful, gospel-centered marriage without having any good wedding pictures or having a photographer there at all. But there is something about seeing the day that you committed yourself to another person well documented that does help to strengthen and remind you of your vows. And I want to be able to provide the best quality services possible. And it almost becomes a little bit like a game, you know, it's like, how fast can I get these pictures back to my clients? You know, I told them it was 90-day turnaround time. Can I get them back in a week instead of 90 days and just shock their socks off? What can I do to increase their love for each other and increase their love for marriage, while still being, I think just a strong business owner in my own right. So that's what makes me love marriage or shooting weddings. What makes me love business is just the chance that I get to provide for my family, and working for myself gives me a lot of flexibility with relationships. So, you know, if I have a friend I have a really good friend who's getting ready to move and they're putting their house on the market. So I get to go photograph their house for them so they can put it up for rent. And that's a huge blessing that I can just, you know, halt my day later today and go bless them in that way.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. So could you briefly describe for us your business and its core values?
I think when I first started out in business, my entire goal again was missions photojournalism. So I wanted to just tell true stories of God's work in the world, because I do believe that he's actively at work bringing glory to his own name. And I wanted to showcase that as I've gotten into more, so a person who works full time in photography is generally doing about 15% shooting and 85% business running. So I think much more about business than I do about the shooting and the core beliefs that I have, which are everything from, you know, I believe that every person is made in the image of God and is therefore beautiful. So I should shoot them in the most beautiful way possible. And I believe that everything I do is meant to be done for the glory of God and as well as possible. And another core, I mean, one of my core beliefs is I believe that coffee should be consumed every single day. And that may seem funny, but it is one of my core beliefs and it's how I live my life. And I'm happy to have that as a business structure. But they all just help to keep me focused and filter a lot of my business decisions. So everything from, the way that I do networking or marketing or what I use my advertising fund for. I think that if I invest in people and if I'm building up people and investing in relationships, then I'm living my life well.
Nice. So what are some of the biggest challenges associated with being a business owner?
Where to begin? I think that everyone has different challenges that they face. I think everyone has different personalities that are either really well suited to self-employment or perhaps not as well suited. And I think that everyone has different emotional capacities for things. My biggest struggles have been the fact that I don't have a boss, which may seem weird. It may sound strange for some people, but I thrive off of structures. I love being told what to do. I love knowing what the expectations are and being able to measure whether or not I've lived up to them. And without a boss, I don't actually have that. I also don't get feedback on whether I'm doing things well or not. So that's been a huge challenge for me. So I've had to work really hard and find some creative solutions for myself that help provide that structure so that I can actually be successful. I'm not good at just, you know, getting up in the morning and working. I need to know what my goals are for that day. So I use a day planner called the Day Designer, and it has today's top three goals as part of the it has this daily schedule as well as daily to-do list and a top three goals section. And I have to focus on those top three goals and dictate to myself what I'm going to do each day. I think another challenge, for business owners is that, you know, most of us who are self-employed didn't get degrees in business before getting into business. So learning things like, tax law and, accounting methods and, like what local government requires from business owners, it can be really overwhelming and confusing. And trying to find the time to focus on business while still creating momentum in business is hard. It's really hard and really tricky. And I don't think there's any right way to do it, but there are some people who have found some really creative ways to create that momentum. And that momentum is like, how do I get clients talking about me? How do I get other people interested enough in my business to want to talk about me as well to get more clients while also thinking, well, how do I make sure I'm paying taxes on time and keeping up to date with my bills?
Yeah. I don't know. I see all those things as being really some of the major struggles that people who are trying to get started face. And it's kind of daunting looking ahead and saying, wow, I don't know if I can figure all this stuff out. Why can't I just stay where I'm at and just shoot a few pictures every once in a while?
Yeah. And I think that it can be hard and daunting. I think, it is a little bit like a game. So if I consider it like a version of competition, it becomes a lot more fun. There is such satisfaction in being able to look at something and say, I built this. I did this. I created this. That as a Christian must be balanced, of course, be balanced with, you know, God led me here. And I think I would not still be in business if I wasn't convinced that this was what God has called me into. I'm fully convinced that, he intends for me to be a self-employed wedding photographer. It was not my preference. I fought it for a really long time. I wanted anything else besides this because it was so overwhelming to me. But once I accepted that I think this is where God called me, and I find so much joy in it. I mean, I've done probably close to 125 weddings, and there's nothing that brings me as much joy as a bride and groom seeing each other for the first time. I get giddy every single time, and that feeling never goes away. And I wouldn't trade that for anything.
That's awesome. That's great. So Where is it that you go to get your inspiration?
I love architectural photography. Again, I love structure, so lines and grids, just that's a huge inspiration for me, which sounds weird, but I think if you look at my work, a lot of it, I love vertical shots and I love strong architectural themes, and placing bride and grooms and wedding parties inside the strong architectural themes. And that's a good thing for me living in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of beautiful architecture around here. So it's like my playground all the time. I've got the best backdrops in the world. So that's one inspiration. I also find a lot of inspiration from 1940s and 50s, fashion magazines. So Vogue and Vanity Fair, just older photographers, who are just really, really gifted at understanding light and form. I'm not an editorial photographer, but I find a lot of inspiration from editorial photography. I think my biggest inspiration is, as a wedding photographer, is the couple's story. So I always want to make sure that I spend time and I put a lot of effort into getting to know my couples because I want their wedding pictures to reflect them. If they're a super goofy couple, we're going to do super goofy pictures because that is a good reflection of them. They wouldn't look natural in a super editorial stylized pose. But for another more dramatic couple that I know, like, they are perfect for that. And if I were to do goofy, they would feel awkward and uncomfortable.
Sure. Absolutely. And how do you go about capturing the couple for who they are? I mean, how do you really go about analyzing that and figuring that out? Or is it just more of a process of experimentation, trying things? What's your method?
Yeah, I think it's both, analyzing them and experimenting with them. So I always try to meet with them before shooting, and I do everything I can to get an engagement shoot with that couple, before the wedding. I include an engagement shoot package, or I include an engagement shoot with every one of my wedding packages. It's a complimentary thing, and it's a test drive. So we have the chance to build rapport with one another. I see how they interact with each other, in front of the camera, and then they see how I pose them. I do have a list of maybe 10 poses in my back pocket that I pull out for pretty much every couple. It's almost like variations on a theme. So I may have the groom move his hand maybe 6 inches, or have the bride look at just, tilt her head a different way, but that's all depending on the couple. So, I think it's, some of it is just analyzing them. I'm a pretty analytical person. So like my brother calls me the female Sherlock Holmes. So I'm always, looking and trying to figure things out anyway. So I don't know if I have a specific method that I could write down, or the questions that I'm asking in my head, but some of it is like, when they hold hands, whose hand is in front? Is it naturally hers or is it naturally his? If it's naturally his, then that it's a subconscious protective stance that he's leading her, which means that it would be more natural for me to pose him standing nice and strong and for her to kind of fold into him. If her hand is on top, that means they might be better with a little bit more independent poses, or stronger poses for both of them. That's just personality right there. And some of it's just height, you know, like I've done a groom before who was 6'10" and the bride was 5'2", I think. And that was challenging. You know, it was mostly sitting shots. I've done grooms who are, you know, 3 or 4 inches shorter than the bride. So those are a little bit more challenging too. So poses like that, just create more challenges, but I think any pose can be modified to fit the couple. I don't always do the same poses for every couple, but I start with this in the same place. So most of my poses have movement to them. So, okay. Groom stand here, bride stand here, bride lean into groom this way, bride put your hand here. And I try to just direct them into something that looks natural for them. And the movement, sometimes I'll direct towards the left or towards the right, depending on the couple. And I don't know, I think that studying, actually sitting down, something that's been super helpful for me is actually sitting down with, I'm a huge on Pinterest. I love Pinterest, and I'm pin poses all the time. So I have a board called the Pose Book, and every once in a while I'll go through there and find maybe a handful of poses that I want to try. But instead of just, you know, looking at it and then telling someone to do that, I'll actually pre-plan those poses before I'm actually on a shoot. So I'll look at the pose and say, okay, where is the lens in comparison to the couple? Is the photographer squatting down at all? Are they on a step stool, or are they aiming down, or is it straight on? How did they talk this couple into that? Where is the weight? Is it on the front foot or the back foot? Is the bride leaning into the groom, or is she standing up straight? Where is the hands? Are they cuddled, or are they upright? So I'll sit and analyze those so I can talk someone through it. And that's just been really helpful for me to just practice in my own head before getting on site with a couple.
That's great. So what would you say then is the purpose of photography?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's stopping time, right? So it freezes time in just 1 second. I think it's memories are a big purpose of it. It's actually being able to remember moments as they happen. It's to be reminded of something. So the big purpose of wedding photography is for couples to have the most important day of their life memorialized. So then, and then preserved for generations. So my goal when I'm shooting a wedding is to shoot it with the grandchildren in mind. Like the 70 years down the road, these pictures will still be relevant. So I don't do anything that's really, I don't follow fads in photography. For that reason, I want all of my work to be really classic. I want it to have staying power. I want it to be timeless, so that when their grandkids look at their pictures, they're not going to cringe because of this, you know, an orange filter that I put on it. Or, you know, this weird, remember when, I mean, it was probably like 7 or 8 years ago, layering was really big. You know, you take like a texture, a photo of like a cool texture and layer it over a wedding photo. And, you know, you do like almost like a vignette. That's a textured vignette. It was weird. I don't know why people did that. I did that, you know, not just other people. I did it too. And, I just cringe when I look at those pictures now, because nobody does that anymore. And I never want my work to go out of style or out of fashion. So I do shoot with the grandchildren in mind. So I think the purpose is investing in generations. I think that, you know, it's a basic question that most people ask is, where did I come from? We know, you know, ultimately as human beings, we're created by God for his glory, but we also ask that question about generations, like, who are my parents? Who are my grandparents? And having pictures, supports that, I think, knowledge of where we've come from.
Absolutely. That's great. So do you have any advice for beginning photographers who are looking to get into the professional marketplace?
Yes, I do. Some of the best advice that I was given, I'll just pass on all of the good advice I was given. The first bit of advice that I was given was to become obsessed with light, master it. So any place that you are, look at the light bulbs and try to figure out what color they are. So figure out how many colors of light there are in a certain room. Pay attention to how the sunlight changes color throughout the day and by every season. Just study how light bounces off of surfaces and how directions can change the feeling of a room. Just study light all the time. The second bit of advice I was given was, good art begets good art. So if we train our eyes to see good art, or if we just place good work in front of our eyes, eventually we'll start seeing that in real life. I do think there are some people that are born with a better eye for photography than others are, but I think that it's not all nature. Some of it is nurture. So you can train your eye to have good taste, basically. So that's one reason that I do like Pinterest. That's also a reason that I try to go to art galleries on a semi-regular basis. Living in Washington, D.C., I have access to the National Gallery of Art. So it's like, yay, I'll just go look at Monet and Rembrandt. I love Rembrandt. I love sitting and looking at Rembrandt's use of light and the way that he posed his subjects. It's so natural. And his use of light was absolutely brilliant and incredible, and something I would really love to emulate. So I think studying good art is helpful. I think when it comes to business, I think one of the most basic things you can do is like get a business license, write a business plan, and every single check that you get, take 30% out and set in a bank account for taxes and pretend that wasn't even part of your payment. Those are the three biggest first steps you can take. I think that's the best advice to start out. Ask lots of questions. There's, a wealth of information out there. Anybody who says, I don't know how to do something, a quick Google search will give you, you know, five answers on how to. So it can be really scary, but fear is a really bad excuse. It's not a good enough reason to not follow your dream or to not do things well. So I spent way too long fearing something I didn't know when it came to business. And it just makes so much more sense to just get over it.
What are some successful methods you've found to promote your business?
My best business always is word of my best business promotions always word of mouth. It always has been word of mouth. I blogged about 5 or 6 days a week when I first got into this, and that was a really great way for me to boost SEO, search engine optimization, and it made me a lot more easily found. I still try to blog 3 days a week. I think the blog world has changed. When I first started blogging back in 2007, not very many people were blogging that many days a week. So 2008 and 2009, I was blogging 6 days a week, even through part of 2010, I think. And for that amount of time, I was different because I did have that consistency. That was a good thing. But there's a lot of people that blog, even, you know, multiple times a day now, and there's just too much digital noise. So people get, you know, overwhelmed by that much information. So I've actually found it better to back off how often I blog, because then people are more excited to read what I have to say. But consistency is king there. So blogging's been really helpful for me. I think, I honestly believe that genuinely loving people is the best possible way that you can market your business or do anything in life. But, you know, when it comes to marketing business, if I am trying to connect to the wedding planner and all I want is for them to recommend me, like, they can smell that, you know, they can tell that that's what's happening. But if I genuinely care about making their business better, if I genuinely care about them as a person, and so what if I never get anything out of it? At least I have a colleague in the wedding world. Well, they'll be able to tell that too, and they'll appreciate your kind gestures, and they'll appreciate the support. I think that viewing, you know, quote unquote competition as colleagues, it's just a much healthier way of viewing the world. One really great thing that a few of us have done, we've in the DC area, I have developed some great friendships with other photographers who are in a similar price point as me. More importantly, they treat their clients the same way that I do, with the same amount of integrity and, you know, majoring on love and care for their clients. And we have started a Facebook group where we pass along referrals. So if someone contacts me and I'm already booked for that day, it's maybe 10 or 12 photographers that I have on my list that I'll get in touch with and say, hey, are you guys free on this day or that day? And they are. If they are, then I pass those names along to my clients. I always want to make sure I'm referring people who I trust to my clients. And I've gotten a lot of work that way from referrals from other photographers. And I think it's a really great way of building camaraderie as well as, you know, increasing your clients' trust.
Absolutely. That's great. I've only got a couple more questions for you. In looking back over your journey as a photographer, what is the greatest takeaway for you?
Biggest takeaway, I think, would be that living by fear is the worst possible way to live. God has not called us to a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And I've so often found that my fear of failure or fear of rejection or fear of disappointing others or of failing my own expectations, it doesn't serve to drive me. It only serves to keep me from loving people like God has called me to. And I've made so many decisions based out of fear that I regret. I've never made a decision based out of fear that I'm thankful for. I always regret the decisions I make out of fear. So it's just, I think that if I would have learned earlier to, actively fight fear in my own life, and I'd never have really considered myself a fearful person. But I'm just seeing more of it in my own life these days, realizing, oh, I was calling that stress. That's actually fear. I was calling that, by a different name, but what it really is fear. And I think that confronting that fear has been one of the best things I've been able to do for myself as a photographer and as a business person. Because fear also, it squelches the creative mind. So it reduces, I feel like it reduces blood flow to the creative parts of the brain, honestly. I mean, it just does stupid things. That's one. And I think a second one would be just do the work. It's really common in the photography world. There is a common, philosophy in the photography world that says, do what you're good at and outsource the rest. This is among full-time business owners. And I, you know what? That is just not always the case. I think that outsourcing some is good, but I think that we fall into this mentality, which is a common mentality among our generation of people, that we should only have to do stuff that we like doing and that we're passionate about. And if you look at, you know, the past 6 or 7,000 years of human history, you'll see that most people did work so that they could feed their families. They didn't do work because they found identity or purpose in it. So I think that if we just adjust our mentality and say, I'm doing this because it's what I have and it takes care of my needs. And that's all that God's called me to do and work. I think it's just good enough. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah. And then I think a third one would be, don't be afraid to just turn off the noise, you know, unfollow blogs, you know, get off Facebook, get off Pinterest. There's only so much creativity that we can gain from looking at other people's good work. At the end of the day, we just need to get out there and create. We need to be the ones who are cultivating our own eyes, not always staring at what somebody else has created. Because after a while, we get stuck with other people's pictures in our heads. Instead of us creating something amazing, we're just copycats. And I think that it can be really dangerous. I think that's where I have a love-hate relationship with social media. And I think that's the downside to social media. We see so much that other people have done and so much that appears to be a level of perfection that we can't attain. We don't think we can attain to, that we stop creating ourselves. And I think if we were to go back, you know, 25 years, I feel like people were a lot more creative then than they tend to be now. We just need to turn off the noise.
That's really a good word. Not something I hear from most people, actually, but I think that what you're saying there is excellent advice, definitely.
There's a really amazing photographer named Candace Hackett in Tacoma, Washington. She owns Ivy and Tweed Photography. And she recently, about maybe 6 months ago, she canceled her Facebook accounts entirely, like deleted it. It's gone. She's totally off Facebook. And she's a friend of mine, and I talked with her about a month ago about it. And she said that it's been one of the most freeing experiences for her, because she had bought into the lie that if she were to spend time, quote unquote, marketing on Facebook, that she would get more clients. And she said, in years of being in business, I only ever booked one client from my time on Facebook, but I was spending hours every single day on it. And it was taking her away from time with people and taking her away from time and creativity. It's not something that I think I can do with my business model at this point, because Facebook does result in some good stuff for me. But I think that it's worth considering. Like, if the thing that's at stake is my creativity and my ability to love people, and the thing that I would need to give up is time on social media, like, we might as well just give it up for a while and just see what happens. I think we would all live much happier, more peaceful lives if we did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that for sure. Well, that's great. That's wonderful. I really appreciate you giving me the time and taking this opportunity to share some of your information, your knowledge on this area. It's really great to be able to hear your perspective on some of this stuff, and I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. So, so happy. If I could leave you with one last word, it's write your goals down. There was a study at a Princeton MBA program back in 1973 that was done on the MBA graduate class, and they asked the class how many people had written goals, and 3% of the class had goals that they wrote down. 13% had goals that they were not written down. The other 84% didn't have any goals. They did a follow-up study 10 years later on them. On average, the 13% that had goals that were not written down were making twice as much as the 84% that had no goals. And the 3% that had written goals were making on average 5 times more than all of the rest combined. I think it's worth thinking about taking time to write down where you want to be what your goals are for yourself as a photographer, as a business owner, and as a person. And think in those three different categories. When we write things down, we're actually, in a sense, we hold ourselves accountable to achieve them. And I think taking time to dream and taking time to actually strive for something more is important.
Wow. Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. That's a great word. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for taking the time to do this interview with me today. You've shared some incredible insights and given us a great perspective that I think we can all learn from. Be sure to check out Sarah's work over at sarahbradshawphotography.com and hop over to her blog and Facebook page while you're at it. Well, that wraps it up for today. Until next time, I'm Greg Hayner. Thanks for listening.